Right now it is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. And we've got Cynthia Hosswinder in the middle studio. Good morning there, Cynthia.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm okay.
Good.
Okay.
I mean, I know you're okay because I already said hello to you.
That's right.
That was a trick question.
Yeah.
We'll bring in Janet Manco, who's probably okay as well. Good morning, Janet.
Yeah, so far so good. Good morning.
Are you great?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll get back on that.
That's exactly.
I think so.
We'll see how the day progresses.
I'll get back with you.
That's right. We'll see how the day progresses before great comes into it.
Janet
and I
take turns. We're never both great at the same time.
Cynthia starts high.
Yeah, I'll start high, and then Janet will take over later.
Okay. That's right. We'll switch off.
Sure, yeah.
All right, we'll go right to the front page of the Lakeville Journal, and you've got a big story on the Women's Support Vigil, which was held once again this year at Kent Town Hall.
So they've been switching around from town to town. They try to get everywhere. I think they were in Cornwall last year, the year before.
Yeah.
They are often in Salisbury out in front of the White Hart on the green. And it's a very moving ceremony. If you've never been, it's really worth going. And I think one of the important things that people don't know about the Northwest Corner is that there is a lot of domestic abuse, and it's not limited by your socioeconomics. And what Women Support Services and Sharon does is they try to give services and support to women and men who are in abusive situations to help them get out. And at this service, they light candles in memory of people who have lost their life from a domestic partner during the past year, which is a disturbingly long list every year.
You know, when you get to October and it's Domestic Violence Month, where every sports league, everybody tries to focus on domestic violence. And it's incredible because when I talk to the folks at Women's Support Services, you find out, and it's true, that for years and years and years, domestic violence was treated like, and I always say, somebody seeing crabgrass or dandelions grow on their lawn or invasive species right. by just pulling it out. We don't do that. To get rid of an invasive species, you have to really get rid of it.
Systemic.
Systemic. And it's really training and instructing children from a very young age through grammar school and high school. The rules which they should operate as both men and women towards other men and women. And sooner or later, that should get rid of most of the domestic violence that happens. But it's a long road, but they've made so many inroads, but the flood of it is just amazing. And you just said it. It's not just men against women now. It's men against women, women with men,
women with women, family members.
It's a lack of respect.
An increase in frustration and
also a desire for a certain amount of power. It all comes down to it. But they do amazing work, I tell you, here locally.
Yeah, they do. And part of what can happen with early education is for children to be able to recognize what is not okay, too. and, you know, if they've grown up in an abusive situation, they don't necessarily realize that there are patterns they can't get out of until they receive other education on it. So Housatonic Youth Service Bureau does this for kids in the schools and other programs that are really helpful.
I believe they just had Jane Doe No More at Housatonic Valley Regional High School. They often do presentations at the local schools trying to teach kids when it's okay to say that's not right.
All right. We will come down. Now, the story, and I have not read it yet, and you can fill me in, Bernie Drew, the other Bunker Hill. When I was a kid, whenever we used to go to Torrington and you used to go up the hill by Mohawk Mountain, my grandmother always called that Bunker Hill.
This is Bunker Hill in Cornwall that he's talking about, and he gives the sort of the family history of it. And, you know, Bernie, of course, is one of our editors and just a wonderful person, but a very respected local historian and writer. And he's writing about, forensically, the history of Bunker Hill and why it's called that.
It's interesting because my grandmother and my grandfather had to explain to me back then, no, it's not the same Bunker Hill you're thinking of.
Right. Not the one you read about in class.
It's not here. Yeah. Right. But it was great to see the story about Bunker Hill because, like I said, I don't know how many people call it that. It's just like Music Mountain is really Barrack Mountain.
Right.
But because it's Music Mountain.
Right. It's actually called Barrack Matif, I was always told. No, whenever you say to local people, it's Barrack Matif, they look at you like you have two heads.
All right. Let's go over to the myths and costs of recycling waste.
So I went to this is a topic that is particularly of interest to me because You know, it's constantly changing over at our transfer stations, what can go into recycling and how things are recycled. And it's hard to keep up with it, and you have to really pay attention. And Brian Bartram is great at the Salisbury Share and Transfer Station about explaining it to you. But so, for instance, where – and we have Leah Walgma is doing a story right now where she interviewed Brian for the holiday season when, of course, we all have an unusual amount of – things that we don't normally recycle. So she's talking about things like Tetra Pak, which is those boxes that people are selling water in. Tetra Pak had not been recyclable here. It is now recyclable. Or black plastic, which you had to throw into general waste, is now recyclable. But so I was at a meeting of the COG, which is the organization of the 21 First Selectmen, and there was a presentation by somebody from Zero Waste talking a lot about glass bottles specifically and how heavy those are and how if you put them into regular garbage, they add a lot of weight and we're paying by the pound or by the ton to have our garbage disposed of. But if you put it into recycling, a lot of the glass bottles that we put in there break and then they contaminate the cardboard now that we're doing single stream. So once you contaminate one part of your load, that means none of it can be recycled. So you've wasted all that load. So he's talking about recommending that we do a bottle bill here and recycle more types of get deposits on more types of glass bottles, for instance, wine bottles and beer bottles, and that we support, you know, I think there's only two recycling centers around here, one's at LeBond's and one's at Freshtown in Amenia, the only two that I know of. And they're often broken. They get a lot of use by you know, a small percentage of the population, and they break down a lot. So he's trying to find a way to make it more remunerative to people to encourage more recycling.
All right. And on the front page, you continue for the third week, to be or not to be or what to be, really a survey about the potential future of the Lakeville Journal and how people can get involved.
Right. And we've had some great responses. I'll let Jana talk about this, too. We've had a lot of great responses. And, you know, certain things that we're hearing is a pattern. We can't always implement all the things that people are asking for, but we're going to try. So I hope people have a little patience for us as we make some adjustments.
Right. And we have gotten a lot of responses. And on one survey, the person wrote, you should have done this online, too. Well, it is online, too, and it's right at the top of our website at tricornernews.com. Do go there. It's easy to fill out the survey there. We welcome you to do that.
All right. Moving inside the paper, and this was, I think, really interesting how it's come about and gone full cycle, gone throughout the region, and that is the short film documentaries that are made. And like I said, we were involved in one a year or two ago, which was put together in a matter of like 4 days by the students. And the work that they do, these students, under Dominic Lesser and I guess
Andrew
his wife, it's stunning the what they put out in a short time.
So this is one of those great examples of local people who have a lot of skills and talent and sharing it with young people and giving them perhaps a pathway to a future career. Or if nothing else, what their goal really is to give young people a medium and encouragement to speak out about issues that they care about. And anybody who's ever met a teenager knows that when an adult says to them, you know, ask them any question, the answer is usually like, yeah, no, they don't really want to share it with you. So what they're trying to do is get young people who do care a lot to express their opinions. And so these short documentary films are a way for them to do that. This is the first time that they've moved into the eighth grade. It's always been high school students at Housatonic, at Hotchkiss. I think they did one at Marvelwood. So now they've done programs at Sharon Center School and Cornwall Consolidated School, and they've aired the ones in Sharon at the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon. The ones in Cornwall will be shown at the Cornwall Public Library on November 3rd, which is a Sunday at 4 p.m.
All right, right below that, a nice story about the Housatonic FFA trip to SUNY.
One thing that we keep hearing about in the responses to the survey is that we should try to get more young people involved. And I would say we've actually done a lot with that over the years, not only with our internship program and with trying to collect as many recent college graduates to write for us as we can, but also the FFA program at Housatonic Valley Regional High School. Every year they elect a student as a reporter. Patrick Sullivan, our senior writer, always works with the FFA reporter to help them learn how to really craft a story that's informative and complete. And so this is the first outing from Danielle Gorat, who is this year's FFA reporter, and it's about a trip that the students took to SUNY Cobleskill to show off their knowledge of nature and the environment.
Yeah, you know, I think it's one place where you really excel is with the interns that you bring in.
Thank you.
And when you run into the interns after they've left the Lakeville Journal years later, you can you can see what they've learned from it. And we're lucky around here. Like the FFA has an amazing ability
program. Yeah.
To give the students the ability to communicate and to understand how to communicate and to write and to report. So.
Because like with Civic Life, it's a program where they really say to the kids, we support you. We want you to do well. We want to hear what you think. Let us know. It's really it's not just about agriculture. It's really learning to speak out and be part of a community.
Yeah, and it teaches the kids how to engage with others, whether they feel as if they have anything in common or not. And that's the great thing about the internship program, too, is that these kids learn how to engage with their communities in a whole different way, and it's so interesting to interact with them, too. And anyone who thinks young people are not capable of that sort of engagement should meet all these kids who are involved with all of these projects.
All right. And you've got a story here about what I think is one of the greatest days at the Audubon Center every year, and that is it can be bitterly cold, it could be nice, it could be rain.
Not raining too hard, though. They will cancel if it rains.
But the Kids' Day, which is coming up this weekend on Sunday, is always a blast.
Yes. Sunday, October 27th from noon to 3 p.m. Come by the carload. It's $20 per car. You park in a big grassy field, and they truck you over on a hay wagon, which is super fun. They have a lot of different activities. Get there early, but the costume parade is at 2:30, and what could be more fun?
I know.
there's hay bale mazes. There's kids' crafts. There's a giant leaf pit. If you've ever dreamt of being all Snoopy and Charlie Brown, you can jump into the leaf pit no matter how old you are. So definitely do turn out for that.
All right. Moving on to page 4 and an actual debate, which actually is more like a forum in Kent between the first selectman's candidate.
Yes, and so the Kent Memorial Library organized that and immediately contacted Janet Manko, who does so many of the debates and forums here in the area. And then Janet and the League of Women Voters of Litchfield County helped them put on a debate in really, I believe, the only town in the northwest corner that has a competition for any seats on the Board of Selectmen. So Gene Speck and Ed Mattson both spoke out. Very interesting people, very different. I do tend to write too long, but I feel like it was justified in this case. We have a very thorough, complete story that should give you a good sense of who these two candidates are. But also, if you go to our website at tricornernews.com, you can link to the video and watch the whole debate yourself, which we recommend.
And there were a couple of events in Falls Village on the 11th and 12th about the future, basically, of Falls Village.
Speaking of first selectmen, Henry Todd, who is running unopposed, is really a visionary and is coming to the town and saying, here's what we need. We're a small town. I can see what the path is forward. We're shrinking in population. We're shrinking in services that are available to people that are necessary for life in the 21st century. Let's try a couple of things. One of them is broadband. I'm doing a bunch of research right now on broadband and fiber optic. It's taking a while. It's very complex, but we'll do a story on that coming up as the town of Norfolk is considering being the first of the towns in our area to wire up with fiber optic.
You know, I was not necessarily in favor of the fiber optic and the wireless coming in as done by the state, separate from the cable companies.
Yeah.
But ever since the cable companies are no longer bound ethically to keep rates the same and keep access the same, since the FCC changed that rule, I think that it's a must for these states to invest in this because when you get broadband from services like what's being thought of, you are treated equally whether you're a homeowner, whether you're a business, unlike when you get it from Comcast or anybody else. It's regulated by the FCC and allows them to say, okay, if you need this certain amount of bandwidth, you have to pay for it. You have to all of a sudden go up against people that can afford to pay it. And so I think this is a good idea that should be – I've totally changed my opinion on it, that you know, something outside the structure of a commercial business operating it would be beneficial, I do believe.
It's sort of similar to about 10 years ago, a lot of the towns in the area bought their streetlights from the power company, and it required a certain amount of wiggling around. But that's what's going to happen with the fiber optic. Towns like Norfolk are starting their own electric utility, and then that's going to open the door for them to do the fiber optic into their towns. It's going to, you know, it'll have a cost, but I mean, if Norfolk can do it, really.
And Patrick Sullivan's story, and I always grimace when I see polls didn't show Trump was going to win the 2016 election because, you know what, the last polls that came out were dead on. They said that Hillary Clinton would win by 2-3% of the vote. And she did.
Popular, yeah.
The popular but unfortunately, the 2-3% of the vote doesn't recognize
the Electoral College. Yeah.
So polls won't match up with the Electoral College. Never have, never will.
Right. Right, because, well, yeah. So if for more detail, read Patrick Sullivan. So Patrick Sullivan has become famous for going to these very complicated forums and talks and just sort of making sense out of it. He's a very good teacher. And so he went to see Doug Schwartz speak as part of the Salisbury Forum. Doug is the head of polling for the Quinnipiac, which, of course, is a college here in Connecticut and famous for their excellent polls and sort of explaining, you know, as Marshall is saying, when polls work and why they don't sometimes.
You know, it's just like now, all these polls being taken, well, it's, you're not even, I mean, it's way too early. It's much way too early. I mean, I know it's a big business now, polling, and I know, but it's way, way too early.
Well, and our anxiety as a culture is we really want to know, like everybody wants to know. That's why I love Jill Goodman's astrology. Thank you, Jill.
All right. How about the church mural joining town and gown?
Some guy called John Shin had contacted me and sent me this very, very professional email saying that there was a mural being unveiled at the church in Salisbury, the Congregational Church. And it wasn't until after Patrick went and covered this story that I realized that John Shin is a high school student, very, very together, this kid, and had put together a project where there are tiles that show hands clasped. It's in the parish hall of the Congregational Church. And his feeling was that the private schools consider themselves in some way separate from the town. And I would say that we don't have an aggressively bad town gown culture, but I would say that definitely is a separation between what goes on the campuses and what goes on in the towns. So his hope is to sort of symbolically unite us all.
All right. The story I want to go to next, because it's got a great picture of Joan Hinchman, is the Run, Wagon, Walk, which takes place, which now has close to 200 people participating every year. But it also gives the dogs in the Little Guild the chance to get exposure and get some exercise and everybody have fun at the same time.
That's right. And normally we would show after a race the winner. But this time we showed somebody who wasn't technically even a competitor. But it was such a great photo that Tom Brown took of Joan Hinchman. He said, well, you know, I live on the race route. So I just came out in my three-wheeled cart with my two dogs. And so if the winner was just running solo with just his two legs, we have Joan, who's got combination of six legs, I think, six legs, three wheels, and having a great time. And that's really what the Run and Wag is all about.
And cheap thrills and hacks for fly fishing. I love it.
So this is really the beginning of our stories about holiday shopping in the area. And Patrick Sullivan, if you've ever read his column, you know that he is not a believer in going to the high-end fishing shop and buying the most expensive thing. He's giving you what are called hacks for fly fishing, where he's sort of saying, these seven or so things are very useful to the fly fisherman. Here's a way that you can do it inexpensively using things from local stores.
All right. And you had a little highlight on this on the front page, but we lost some major people over the past couple of weeks.
This has been a real, you know, of course, statistically, the same number of people more or less die every year. But we feel that we've lost a lot of really special people this year and a lot of people in our community. And, of course, Tony Scoville, really respected, longtime person here, you know, part of the Scoville family here. And also Bub Pitcher, 103 years old, really a super respected, you know, war veteran, just a lovely guy. You never hear anybody say anything bad about Bub Pitcher. So two hard losses. And, of course, also this weekend, the memorial service for Dr. Curtis.
All right. And it was right by my house. The runners, God bless them, with the Beast,
the
Salisbury
Beast,
Beast. I'll tell you what, looking at that race, at that course, I wouldn't want to drive it in a car, never mind.
Yeah, that was a straight uphill. That was a tough one, a 5K and a 10K. Athena Fliakas organized it, and we have a longer story. I'll post it on the internet, but a really, you can see by the photo, really a cute group. But the big sports story, of course, this week is Rob Buccino went to the Hoosie soccer game, and actually we were all ready to put it in the front page because they've had such a great run. They've won eight games in a row, and that was the one game that they've lost. But we'll assume that that'll be their one loss and that they'll continue to go on and be victorious throughout the rest of the season.
All right, let's go on to the opinion page. No kidding, support your local businesses and organizations. We talked a little bit about that last week in a different vein,
right.
But it's so true.
Right. And if we think we don't need reminding, we do, because it's just too easy to simply go online and think, well, I'll just order overnight from Amazon, or take an easier way than going downtown or to another close by downtown and doing your shopping locally. Because when you look around at all of the merchants and organizations that need support in this area, if we do not support them, they will disappear and they will change what our communities look like. And that's why we like living here, is the way our communities are. So give this a read. Let us know your thoughts. Small Business Saturday is coming Thanksgiving weekend, but don't wait for that moment to look around and support your local businesses.
And you've got lots of different letters to the editor, and you also have your ballots for all the different elections on the opposing page.
We do. This is, and it's funny how you put that, the opposing page. It's just the next page. They're not in opposition to anybody because they're just candidates. But anyway, this is the second time we've run the ballots. The first time we ran them, the beginning of August, they were not completely set. We have more petitioning candidates here, so this will prepare all our readers for Election Day. We also, in our editorials, talk about supporting town government, and we talk about a few of the races and encourage people to vote. We have three letters on the elections upcoming, which is great, and we also have a really good column from Rich Kessin on why you should get a flu shot. And from Matt Gordon, we have sustainable housing design, attainable for all of us.
Okay, and turning back to pages on October 1919, my favorite from turning back to pages this time, is on Tuesday evening, the roof of the lower foundry caught fire, which caused some excitement for a little while.
So I was going to take this moment to put in a pitch. You can see all of these back issues now online. They're all scanned and archived. You can find them through our website. They're technically on the Scoville Memorial Library website, and it's really fun to read them. And since a lot of people have said in the survey, in, you know, maybe not in so many words, but through the things that they say, they show a nostalgia for the old Salisbury and the old Northwest Corner. Sometimes I think, which is maybe rose-colored glassed, I think that maybe life wasn't always as idyllic as we like to think it was. But we're thinking about pulling back some of these full pages from those old issues from, you know, as early as they have 1897 was our first issue.
All right, let's go to Compass, and you start off with bunnies, birds, and diamond dust.
Right, and if that doesn't make you want to read it, what will? This is an art exhibit at Eckert Fine Art in Kent. It's by Hunt Slonim, who is well known for his whimsical characters, especially animals that he has in his paintings, and they are indeed embellished with diamond dust. Alexander Wilburn does a wonderful interview with the artist, so don't miss this. It's really enlightening. If you're wondering, do I really want to look at paintings of bunnies and birds, and what's with the diamond dust? Well, Hunt Slonim explains it all to Alexander, and it's fascinating.
And you know, Cynthia came in and saw. I clipped one of the stories out of the Millerton News, and this is why it's a small little thing, but it's, I want to explain the importance of having a local paper. In Connecticut, it's the Halloween celebrations are a little different. They're pretty much set, but in New York State, you have a complete listing of the Harlem Valley from Millerton, Wasaic, Dover Plains, Millbrook, Pine Plains, Copake, Stanfordville. Of every event related to Halloween.
Right, and if you think that was easy to pull together for them over there, it really wasn't. It took them time, and it's really useful information, because even if you don't have anyone in your family trick-or-treating anymore, be very aware of where these kids will be doing that. Everybody has to be very cautious driving around on Halloween night.
No, I can tell you it's not easy, because I just put the Connecticut ones together and the ones in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And what I can read in 35 seconds takes about an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Yeah, right. And so you really hope people are listening carefully, because it is important that
it's one of those things about having a local newspaper that won't appear in the Poughkeepsie Journal, that won't appear in the Republican American. Fine papers in their own right, but things like that just won't appear.
You're right. This is what makes us local, and we care about our communities, and we want to serve them as best we can. And you know, that's one of the reasons we're doing the survey, is to hear what you would like. I hope somebody says, "Oh, and it was great having the listing of the Halloween events."
And And on that note, we're putting together now the list of Veterans Day services. Okay. So if you are out there and you're organizing your town's vet services, please email me and let me know.
All right. And that is a look at some of the stories in this week's Lakeville Journal, tricornernews.com, Facebook, and also Instagram. We'll speak to you guys next week.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
All right. That is this week in the Lakeville Journal here on Robinhood Radio. You can find our rebroadcast of this show on demand, robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on this week in the Lakeville Journal.